Affairs, come to order. It's 9:02 on the 9th or the 10th. It's on a Thursday of March. We have members present, Senator Wilikowski, Vice Chair Coghill, Stoltz, and Senator Huggins. We have two measures before us today. It's, we have the preliminary presentation of the retirement bill, and we have the public, which is Senate Bill 83, and we have Senate Bill 1. Senate Bill 89 is not in our possession. So, I'd like to invite, we received the message Senator McGuire is detained this morning, so please present. We're only going to have about 25 minutes to do this. It'll be in deference. So please come up. The 25 minutes or so, is we have a lot of folks. This is a public testimony section for Senate Bill 1, so a lot of interest from all sides on that. So welcome.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. For the record, Genevieve Watusik 26 staff to Senator McGuire. She apologizes for being detained at the moment. She is getting here as soon as possible. You have Senate Bill 83 in front of you for the first time, an act relating to the Protective Occupation Retirement Council, relating to participation of certain employees in the defined benefit and defined contribution plans of the public employees retirement system and providing for an effective date. In 2005, Alaska moved away from a defined benefit to a defined contribution retirement system for public employees hired after July 1, 2006. Both the DB and the DC plans contain risks and benefits to employees and employers. With a DB plan comes the advantage of professional money management, lower fees, pooled risk, and long-term investment strategies. However, employers carry significant risk if investment returns fall short or actuarial predictions prove inaccurate, which they are shielded from in a defined contributions plan. Taking both of these points of views into account, the Variable Benefit Retirement System, or VBRS as we're calling it, was developed. And we have William Fournier, who's an actuarial, and he's on the line to do a presentation that I've got ready for you guys, if you'd like to go into that.
Sure. As long as it's fairly concise.
Yes, it is.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Welcome, sir. Please identify yourself for the record. We're anxiously awaiting your presentation.
Thank you. I'm William Fournier. I'm an actuary with Pension Trustee Advisors working on behalf of the Firefighters Association. And I believe you all have a brief presentation in front of you. It's 28 pages, but I certainly won't go through them all. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I was distracted.
Say they had a presentation.
Oh, please go ahead.
Okay, well, what we're going to focus on is why it's necessary to make a change from the current structure, what the proposed, and I'm on page 2 now, what the proposed structure is of this new retirement program that we're calling a variable retirement plan, and then some examples of how it would have worked if we'd had it all along. And probably the best way to demonstrate why it's necessary is to look at page 4. That's a bar chart that shows three bars of hypothetical police and firefighter benefits for a firefighter or police officer that retires at age 56 and has an average salary of $80,000, and what I'll call him a he, what he would get from various programs. If he had been under the Tier 3 defined benefit plan, this is the one for people hired before 2005, he would have a pension of about $45,000 a year. But if he was under Tier 4, our projections are that he'd only have about $25,000 a year. And even if he were covered under Social Security, which he's not, but if the state or the local municipalities didn't offer any benefit other than Social Security, he'd have about $22,000 a year. So what we're demonstrating here is that the Tier 4 benefit is not a whole lot better than Social Security, and it's significantly less than what his counterpart would have under Tier 3, and frankly, quite a bit less than what's needed to retire after a 25-year career. Up in Alaska. The next point we want to address is that there's a health care provision that is a retiree health care provision currently in place. And that this is on page 5. We've got a little discussion on this. And I can't see you all online, so please don't hesitate to ask any questions as I'm going along.
Well, I don't think we're going to have a lot of, this is not going to be punctuated by a lot of questions, because if we're at 25 minutes, we're going to stop you. So we do have public testimony.
Well,
so.
I will only be about 10 or 12 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
So,
well, pick one of those numbers, but please proceed.
Okay. So page five, we looked at an average tier 4 police officer and firefighter. Your average hire age of this group is 32. Since they had to be hired after 2005, their average age is probably about 36. If he, I'm assuming it's a male, retires in 25 years at age 57, he'll get some Medicare supplement insurance, which everybody gets, but he'll need 8 more years of coverage somehow between 57 and 65. Since he's only put in 3% into his HRA's, the health retirement account, he'll only have enough balance to pay for about 30% of the cost of what he needs to pay. And that's assuming he earns 7%, which is perhaps a little bit ambitious, but plausible. He'll need to use other resources to pay for the remaining 70%. And the problem is, for this type of person, is while today, the monthly premium for insurance coverage is about a third of the average pay under a PERS employee, because we expect healthcare costs to escalate faster than wages, by 2034, when this guy's retiring, his healthcare premium will be, over half of what his pay was. And so there's a need to have this kind of plan in place, a more plausible plan. Page 6 talks about why some of the pros and cons of the defined benefit approach versus the defined contribution approach. Basically, the defined benefit approach is more efficient. So if you're an Alaska taxpayer, or if we're using Alaska dollars to pay for the police officer or firefighters, salary as well as something to enable him to pay a retirement, it's more efficient to put it into a defined benefit plan because it can pool the risks, it can get higher returns. Now, the DC approach that you currently have is more consistent with the individual responsibility idea. It's also more clearly defined for the employer and the costs. It's the benefits fully or controlled by the individual, more portable, and there's no risk of unfunded liabilities. So what we're trying to do is, we talk about on page 7, is kind of striking a compromise. And what this bill does is it fixes the employer contribution so that there's no risk of that going up. And then it creates a board or a committee to figure out how to live within that fixed contribution. So it's got target benefit levels. I'm on page 7 now. And so that board will have some authority to figure out how to adjust benefits or employee contributions, police and firefighter contributions, as necessary to provide the benefits out of that fixed contribution amount. We've also designed it using a lower anticipated rate of return in order to give a little cushion against long-term experience that might be worse than expected. And that's where this differs from the current tier one, two, and three, is that we're being conservative. It's up to the board to adjust. It's they're not going to be throwing liabilities back on the state. Jumping ahead a little bit in the interest of time, page 9 kind of shows how it would work. Currently the members that are in the defined benefit plan are paying. By members, I mean the police officers and firefighters. I'm on page 8, excuse me. The police officers and firefighters are paying 7.5% of pay. If they're in the old plan, the employers are paying about 22% of pay. Much of it is for the ongoing cost of the plan, but, you know, more than half of it is to pay off these old unfunded liabilities. For individuals under the defined contribution retirement program, they're putting in 8% of pay, the employer's putting in 5 for them, and then, other amounts that also add up to 22%. What this variable plan is proposing is we bump up the member contribution from 8 to 9, keep the employer still at 22, but pay part of that 22 for the legacy, you know, the pre-2005 unfunded liabilities, and then 14% for this plan. So basically it's up to this pension board to figure out how to make that 9 plus 14% work, how to provide the levels of benefits. And our projections are that they could provide benefits pretty similar to Tier 3, but, you know, if things don't turn out so well, they won't. Let's jump to page 11. It talks about how this council or board would make adjustments if necessary. There's three safeguards we're putting into this plan, so to prevent the state from having to contribute more than 22%. And one of these safeguards is the council can adjust things as things go along. They can increase the employer contributions or decrease them if things are good. They can provide cost of living increases. They can adjust the benefit, or they can adjust how much goes towards health care. Page 14 is another safeguard that we have in place, which is the actuarial methods. Because we built in a margin by using lower assumed rates of return, you know, we have the threshold before we need to act is higher. So, you know, it's less likely that we'll have to act in response to returns being less than expected if we expect less. It'll also build in reserves if things turn out to be better than expected. And then page 15 kind of reiterates that on the actuarial discount rate. Whereas the system for the rest of the state is the ongoing defined benefit system is assuming that you're going to earn 8% return. By only assuming 7% return, it'll give the board a little more cushion before they need to perhaps take action. Page 17 is a line chart that kind of looks at what would happen if we had had this plan all along. And, you know, we modeled this with various starting years, you know, from 1963 to 2009 rather, and 85 was like a typical example. And what would have happened is this program has a target level of benefits and a guaranteed level of benefits. The guaranteed level of benefits is lower than the target. You know, we're only going to guarantee what we know we can handle. And so looking at the top line, which is the guaranteed level, you know, this plan would have had a funded ratio of, well over 100% in all but a couple of years. But even if you look at the target levels, it would have had a funded level of over 100% in most years. You know, with the market having declined so much in 2008, if this plan had been in place, it would now be, you know, on a target level basis, about 95% funded, whereas on a guaranteed level basis, it would have been 110% funded. So what we're trying to demonstrate with this, and we did a similar model in a good year and a bad year, or good start and a bad start, we're trying to demonstrate is that, you know, this should work. You know, as long as the board is prudent in not guaranteeing more than it can afford to guarantee, you know, the plan returns go up and down, and this should be able to comfortably provide a guaranteed level of benefits and probably provide a much higher target type level of benefits. I want to go through some case studies quickly. Page 21 looks at, there's four states that have similar types of programs, and they seem to have worked pretty well. Wisconsin is a very well-funded plan that its board has the flexibility to generate cost of living adjustments based on returns, so that kind of keeps them in good shape. South Dakota's in the similar situation. Ohio is probably the most similar to you, where the contributions are fixed, so there's no increased contributions by the that have to go through the legislature. But then their boards every year decide how much to use for health care and how much needs to go to pensions. And then Colorado, in the fire and police environment, also has a fixed contribution rate where this board makes decisions year after year how much to shift. Wrapping up quickly on pages 26 and 27, basically, this plan proposes that the employers put in 14% of pay for the public, the police and firefighters. There's a small group of people that work in police and fire departments that are not police and firefighters. For those folks, we're proposing a 12% of pay contribution. This is consistent with other plans around the country. It's consistent with some of your significant employers in Alaska, such as Wells Fargo or Alaska Airlines. And then in kind of a recap on page 27, we realize that the state is very concerned with future unfunded liabilities. That's the reason you made this change in 2005. However, the way the change was made is just not projected to provide adequate benefits for this next generation of police officers and firefighters. I apologize. That says HB 247. That was last year. This, Senate Bill 83 is a potential solution. If actuarial experience is as we expect, the benefits will be very similar to Tier 3 benefits. If it's worse, lower benefits will be paid. And again, we want to reiterate that the nice thing about this is under Tier 4, the individuals each take the risk. Under Tier 3, the government's taking the risk. But in this proposal, the police and firefighters as a group take the risk. So because it's a pool, it's much more efficient and effective than on an individual Tier 4 type basis. That wraps up my prepared remarks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fournier. We have three, and welcome Senator McGuire, the sponsor of the bill. We have three members of the fire, public safety aspects of fire. We have Mr. Westcott and Mr. Murphy, and I don't know if Mr. Conkling is still here. We'll hope to get to the testimony of the three of you gentlemen. So who wants to go first? Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Westcott. I'm president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters. I'm also a captain at the Anchorage Fire Department, working out of Station 5 in Spinard. Let me start by thanking you for taking the time to listen to this important piece of legislation. Fixing Tier 4 and the shortcomings is very important, and that's why, currently there's public safety professionals around the state tuned in, listening to this important discussion. The first goal of any retirement system should be to ensure that participants are ready to retire and can remain self-sufficient once they do retire. As we saw in slides 3, 4, and 5 of Mr. Fournier's presentation, this is going to be difficult under Tier 4. And this is compounded by the fact that many in Tier 4 do not have Social Security or SBS. If you're a firefighter or a police officer in Kenai, Anchorage, Fairbanks, you don't participate in either of those plans. So your only plan is Tier 4.
And those are federal prohibitions? Or how does it?
The state has a 218 agreement with the federal government, and it outlines who is in and who is out, and traditionally, firefighters and police officers have participated in divine benefit plans based on the need to retire at a younger age because of the physical nature of the job. SB 83, the variable benefit retirement plan, is an attempt to do it better. And this plan was born out of listening to the concerns of the legislature. We have walked the halls here, and we have met and sat down with probably 90% of the legislature and listened to the concerns. Concerns about risk, concerns about unfunded liabilities. And we've addressed that in this solution. And that's one of the primary things that we addressed in this solution. We also looked around the country, as Mr. Fournier talked about, and we looked at the plans that are successful. And we didn't reinvent the wheel. We stole the good ideas. How did Wisconsin remain near 100% funded after a financial collapse? They built in tools that allowed them to deal with adverse experience, and we have those in this bill. So as I said, SB 83 is an attempt to do it better. So why would we want to do it better? One thing we know is large pooled accounts, they earn higher rates of return, and they pay lower fees. It's just the economies of scale. When you want your plumbing fixed, you call a plumber. When you want your investments to earn the maximum return that they can, you hire professionals to manage your money. We can see short periods of time where DC accounts will outperform large accounts when there's a large or a big run in the market. But over the long haul, it's just a fact that these large pooled accounts will outperform the individual. The variable benefit plan also allows us to pool risk. Currently, all the risk is at the individual level. We can pool that risk, and we can take care of the individual that lives till 65 and the individual that lives till 85. And we can ensure that they're both self-sufficient in retirement and have a steady stream of income. The other thing is that the pension funds don't need to diversify. As an individual gets closer to retirement, they need to change their investment portfolio to shield themselves from risk. When they do this, they lower their rate of return, so what they're earning on that money. A pension fund doesn't need to do that because it's going to go on and on and on. So why should the state be concerned? Well, here's three points that I think the state should be concerned. The first is costs associated with recruitment, retention, and training of new police officers or firefighters if you're losing them to other jurisdictions. We're competing, and I think you'll hear one of the officers talk about some of the offers that other cities are giving to police officers in the state of Alaska to come join their department. Secondly, we could experience higher workers' comp claims associated with an older workforce that is still required to work on the line, as we call it. There's only so many desk jobs in a public safety organization, so we're going to be requiring individuals to work much longer, and we could see, just because we know that the body eventually starts to give out, we could see some higher workers' comp claims experience. Lastly is increase in social welfare costs. If individuals retire and run out of money and they're not on Social Security and they have nothing, we could see a spike in the reliance on social welfare programs. I'm not making this up. University of Massachusetts at Boston did a study, and they said individuals without defined benefit pensions were nine times more likely to be in poverty when they retired. So there is a lot of data that individuals not in defined benefit pensions are not ready to retire or ill-prepared to retire as they get closer, and we worry that our members would be in the same boat. So some of the highlights, again, of our bill and our plan is we allow the employee contributions to fluctuate in order to deal with adverse experience. They can go up to a certain level. We promise a medical benefit that's paid in a stipend as opposed to a level of coverage that we don't know what the cost will be. cost of living increases are optional and they will be given by the board based on the health of the plan. And a portion of the benefit is variable, as we say, and as we talked about, guaranteed benefits versus target benefits. We want to pay out here, but if we're only financially capable to pay out here, then that's what we'll do. And so we're able to adjust the actual benefit that an individual is going to receive. So, in conclusion, I'm not here to tell you that this piece of legislation is perfect the way it sits today. There certainly are some legal concerns that we understand. There's fiscal concerns that we understand. But there's no obstacle too great that we can't overcome and fix this and come out with a good piece of legislation that fixes the problem and provides a better benefit for our members around the state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Westcott. And we'll probably just have time. We have one of the other public safety sections. Mr. Conkling, did you want to add anything? Very good. Well, then we'll have both segments of public safety that are here. We have several segments here. But.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Jeremy Conkling. I'm an officer with the Anchorage Police Department, and I'm here representing Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I'm here basically just to tell you a little bit about what the impacts of not having the fine benefit are specifically on the Anchorage Police Department. As the largest department in Alaska's largest city, we're having a terribly difficult time when it comes to recruitment. That's the first issue that we've been able to identify. We're seeing about 75% fewer applications to our department than we were back in the late 90s and early 2000s. One of the reasons that we've attributed to that is the lack of retirement. People don't have an incentive to come join our department and work for 20 years up here in Alaska with no security on the back end. Another issue we're seeing is the retention of qualified officers. To give you an example, I was hired in January 2007 by Bradley's, came to APD in 2011. The training I received at APD has been really great. I'm a firearm instructor, an officer survival instructor, a member of the department SWAT team, a field training officer. That's a lot of money that the city of Anchorage has invested in me, and the citizens of Anchorage, and other officers too, and the citizens of Anchorage deserve highly trained professional officers. When we're unable to recruit and keep highly trained professional officers, it does a disservice to the citizens of Anchorage. We at APD have shifted from becoming more of a destination to more of a training ground, where officers come, they get hired on, we spend several hundred thousand dollars in several years training them, giving them certifications, and then we're seeing them leave. They're going to places like Denver Police Department in Colorado, which Mr. Westcott talked about having the defined benefit program. Denver Police is offering us the ability to buy back up to 10 years of service when we go, if we go down there, meaning that with 12, 14 years on, can go down there, buy 10 years back, and only do 10 more years, get a full retirement. We're losing officers to California departments who still have pensions, Montana, other departments, Colorado, Boulder, Colorado, Montana State Police. And the reason in exit interviews that these people are leaving is that defined benefit. Duluth, Minnesota is another one that we've lost officers to. That is hurting us as a department. Our staffing's low. And not having any incentive for our officers to stay, for our officers to take that training and put that training to use here in Anchorage is, I think, a bad situation for us, and it's only getting worse. So that's about everything I wanted to hit on. The recruitment, the retention, we see this as a huge advantage for us if we could get legislation passed that would return us to a defined benefit.
Thank you. Senator McGuire, we didn't get a chance to, no, please, no, you can.
We're good.
Senator McGuire, you didn't get a chance, your staff opened it. This is, we have this bill up in deference to
you. Thank you. I really, well, first of all, I want to say thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee,
for hearing this bill. As you know, one of the things that I'm known for is innovation and being a visionary and reconsidering the way that we do things. And I don't believe that things are black and white. I know that in House Bill, Senate Bill 141, there was certainly a push at a certain point in Alaska's history for fiscal considerations, to move away from a defined benefit plan for our fire and teachers and police officers out of concerns, again, as I said, for fiscal considerations, to a defined contribution plan. And what I've been hearing in my time serving in both the House and the Senate from the men and women who are serving at the ground level is the testimony that you've heard today, that there are concerns about recruitment and retention. There are concerns about their ability to retire after they leave the force, and I want to bring those concerns forward to start red flagging them for us to think about if there's a different way. And this hybrid possibility is something that, you know, Representative Hawker has looked at, I've looked at, we've been churning on it and thinking about how Wisconsin, how Colorado has done it. And I wanted to bring it forward to the members of this committee because I think you're all very bright and recognize that things are constantly turning in public policy. And again, it's not necessarily the case that it's black and white. And I think that these fine men and women that serve our state deserve our attention on this matter. They run into buildings when they're on fire. I mean, it's just as plain and simple as that. They save our families. And I don't want to think that, particularly in my community, when I think about the APD, we have shootings. We just had a hearing in Judiciary that revealed that, you know, we've got alarming statistics going on for a variety of reasons, but one of them is certainly that we've got a police force that has been reduced, gang units that have been disbanded, and problems retaining experienced folks. And so I just appreciate you listening to this idea, and I hope you'll consider moving it forward and having more hearings on this, Mr. Chairman. There's opportunities in the interim as well. But these men and women are public servants just like us. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
We'll give it a fair review. And Mr. Boucher from administration, we would like you to, you've seen the handout, or we'll have a chance to look at it more in depth, and seen the legislation. We put a lot of trust in the administration. You guys are and look at the actuarials and giving us your best analysis, and we would like a candid point-by-point on this. You can give that to us in correspondence to the committee, and we'll certainly have you before us again when we bring this up. But we want to have no blindfolds on this. We're dealing with a fiscal issue, which is one of the three legs of our deficit. So with that, we'll set this aside.
Thank you.
Senator Higgins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would, for those that are carrying the initiative, other than the bill sponsor, to look at a course of action where we push what you described with some different parameters, potentially just push it to you and say, okay, you manage it. You take the responsibility for the workforce. And how we look at doing sideboards on that so that you're making a proposal. With the proposal, you also take the responsibility. But just look at that as an alternative course of action.
We want to have the best information in front of us. That will set the bill aside, and we'll just take a brief at ease. Senate State Affairs come back to order. We have before us Senate Bill 1 in deference to making sure as many folks in the public get to testify. Senator Machicki has waived a chance to talk about his bill, so a politician who gave up the microphone in deference to his constituents. So good call, Senator. Good call, Senator. We have, and we're going to be jumping back and forth to sites to try to make sure that we, and I have no idea that any site has any peculiar weighted factor, so we're going to just wade through this. I am going to start with the Anchorage LIO, and I'm assuming this is Dr. George Stewart. George Stewart, hope you've been able to wait through our slightly longer first presentation.
I gather that's my opportunity to talk now. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
I'm George Stewart. I'm a retired medical doctor, practiced in Anchorage for 35 years. My specialty was in lung disease. Senate Bill 1 is about protecting the health of Alaskans. Specifically, the secondhand smoke is toxic. It's toxic. It causes cardiovascular disease, lung cancer, sudden infant death syndrome. It harms children. It harms women who are pregnant. It harms the baby in the uterus of the women who are pregnant. And Senate Bill 1 steps forward to allow us to have clean indoor air in the workplace, in public buildings, in areas where people gather for various events, such as the room that we're in right now. Alaskans are entitled to have clean air. Also the Sullivan Arena, also other sporting event places. People should not be exposed to the toxic effect of cigarettes or the toxins that come out of e-cigarettes. This bill includes a ban on e-cigarettes indoors. We're not saying that the e-cigarettes should be banned from Alaska. We're not saying that cigarettes or cigars or anything else should be banned. If people want to make a personal choice to use those particular chemicals, that's their privilege. But not to do it in a place where it will have a harmful effect on other people. In regard to the e-cigarettes, the exhales, the materials that come out of it include formaldehyde, toxic metals such as chromium, lead, and zinc. The study was just published from the University of Southern California. If you Google online, there's lots of information about the toxic materials that come out of the e-cigarettes. As I said, with regular cigarettes, secondhand smoke contains more than 77,000 chemicals. Hundreds are toxic, 70 can cause cancer. This is from a document published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In addition, there's carbon monoxide in cigarette smoke. Secondhand cigarette smoke contains carbon monoxide. It's the highest source of CO in the public environment these days. And CO is highly toxic. Back in the old days when the Anchorage Assembly used to meet over on Tudor Road, there were a couple of episodes where, and smoking was allowed during the Assembly meeting, there were a couple of episodes where the carbon monoxide alarms went off and they had to get everybody out of there. Now it's always smoke-free. So basically, my point is, please, yes, let's pass Senate Bill 1. Let's make indoor smoking illegal in areas where it will cause harm to other people other than the smokers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Dr. Stewart, I just want to thank you for the level of care you provided for my family, my father when he was alive, and I'll never forget that my father, when I left session when he was in the hospital prior to his passing, you came right off an international flight at 3 in the morning to I can never convey my family's appreciation for your professional dedication. So I just wanted to say thank you. There's things you can't say because of HIPAA, so I offered them up. From my entire family, thank you.
My appreciation. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Staying in Anchorage, we have Jennifer Woolley, and we're, I was giving the doctor a little deference, as you see from my personal. We're going to have to ask people to about 2 minutes if they can. Some people are succinct, and we won't hold people that rigidly, but a guide to let everybody get through.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jennifer Woolley, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I've been passionate about community health for my whole life, which has led me to pursue a career in healthcare. I'm dedicated to working at home in Alaska because I believe in investing in the health of this state. And this same spirit of health prioritization is at the heart of this bill. The intent is to protect working Alaskans, the backbone of this state, from secondhand smoke and aerosol. I ask you, as the legislative body for unincorporated areas who can't pass laws for themselves, and for bodies without health powers, to act in support of this bill. Please remind Alaskans that they do have the right to smoke and vape, but they have the responsibility to their neighbors and to their coworkers to take it outside. In the long term, this decision will ensure that my future non-smoking patients will not come to me with cancer, COPD, aggravated asthma, and other health concerns caused by secondhand smoke. On behalf of these future patients, myself, my family and my neighbors, I ask you to please support Senate Bill 1.
Thank you very much, Ms. Woolley. Next we have Gail Sheeman.
Good morning. My name is Gail Sheeman, and I'm here on behalf of myself in support of Senate Bill 1. I started in the hospitality industry at the age of 14. I was a bartender and bar manager for over 20 years. I never smoked personally a day in my life. I now have COPD. I have to use an inhaler and medication every day. Secondhand smoke makes employees sick. Secondhand smoke is real, and it kills. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sheeman. Next, Dara Glass.
Good morning. My name is Dara Glass, and I'm here on behalf of myself and, as some of you are aware, on behalf of my late husband, Sam, who passed away in August 2013 from lung cancer. Granted, the lung cancer that he acquired was not based on secondhand smoke. It was based on his time in the military. But that point is to prove to you that non-smokers do get lung cancer. And that is something that seems to be questioned throughout the United States for various reasons and makes absolutely no sense to me. I am in support of SB1 for that reason and also for the reason that my mother has asthma and her asthma is based upon secondhand smoke growing up with my grandfather who smoked for 62 years and that is how she came to have asthma to this day. Having to have an inhaler twice a day and additional medicine on top of that. Secondhand smoke, as you are aware, leads to other issues as well, COPD, heart issues, and a variety of other things. And one of the things that the legislature can do to make life better for everyone in the state of Alaska is to help mitigate the health issues created by secondhand smoke. And in turn, that will improve our economy and lower the cost of medical care. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Luanne Jensen.
Good morning. My name is Luanne Jensen, and I'm representing myself and my children. As a mom of two young children, part of my responsibility is to protect my children and limit exposure to harmful environments. I feel strongly that all Alaskans should be protected in their workplaces and support SB1 to include e-cigarettes. I shared this next part last week with the House and wanted to share with you. 2 months ago, Johns Hopkins reported that exposure to e-cigarette aerosols results in decreased ability to withstand bacterial and viral infections in mice. Mice, as we know, starts that process of testing in humans. Despite the common perceptions that e-cigs are safe, this study clearly demonstrates that e-cig use, even for relatively brief periods of time, may have significant consequences to respiratory health. I strongly support this, and I urge you to pass SB1. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. Next, we have Sheb Garfield.
Thank you. My name is Sheb Garfield. I'm an ex-smoker, now an avid vapor, and a manager at Cafe de Vapor. SB1 includes personal vaporizers because of the fear of secondhand vapor being dangerous like secondhand smoke. its supporters will tout that there isn't much research on the subject, so we should preemptively ban their use in public and businesses. A short time on Google will show you the opposite. Once you read through the blogs and articles hyping the evils of vaping that state opinions instead of facts by cherry-picking certain results out of context from studies, or using correlation as proof instead of causation. The biggest offenders being America's for non-smokers' rights, i.e. Stanton Glantz's pseudoscience front, and most recently, the debacle in California called Smoke-Free California. Here are some recent studies showing that secondhand vapor is risk-free. A peer-reviewed study in toxicology and pharmacology, published December of 2014, compared the makeup of secondhand smoke and secondhand vapor to that of ambient air. I've included a copy of the study and the peer review in my testimony because there's enough time to go over it all, but here are some highlights. E-cigarettes contain and deliver mostly glycerin and PG water. Aerosol nicotine content was 85% lower than that of the cigarette smoke nicotine. The levels of harmful or potentially harmful chemicals in the aerosol were consistent with that of the air blanks, less than 2 micrograms per puff. The air blanks are the same as the ambient air you're breathing in every day. Mainstream cigarette smoke has a harmful chemical, or potentially a harmful chemical makeup of 3,000 micrograms per puff. It's 1,500 times higher. No significant contribution of tested HPHC classes was found in the e-cigarettes. The only difference in the study found between the ambient air and the vapor in the e-cig was more PG, VG, and a higher water content. Everything else was consistent with the air you're already breathing in. Let me say that again in case anybody missed it. Everything else was consistent with the air you're already breathing in. Now let's take a look at some health experts that support vaping. Dr. Murray Lysian from New Zealand, he's the most respected tobacco policy and health researcher. He says nicotine is one of the safest drugs and is being sold as an alternative to the most dangerous consumer product, a cigarette. It's very low risk compared to cigarettes in the real world that smokers face. I chose this statement because the supporters of this bill, including Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance and Alaska Department of Health even, keep claiming nicotine is harmful and as addictive as heroin, and always talk about its addictive qualities and dangerous health concerns. Which brings me to the next quote, Dr. Jean-Francois Etter, PhD, MPH, a professor at the University of Geneva. Even if they are long-term vapers, this is not a problem, as long as they quit smoking. The problem is combusted tobacco, not nicotine. At the dosage used by vapers, and even the users of nicotine gum and patches, nicotine is non-toxic. Long-term vaping is not a public health problem, not any more than the long-term use of Nicorette gum. Thank you.
Does that conclude your testimony, Mr. Garfield?
Yes, it does.
All right, thank you. We let you go a little longer because we've been a lot of volume of on the vaping issue, so we wanted to, and we've had a kind of a slanted presentation, but so we're trying to even out the discussion a little bit, but I don't think we'll get there, but that's, but when there are folks that haven't had a chance to present before, we'll give a minute or two extra if we need. And next, we go to Anchorage, Mr. Nguyen.
Hello. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak today. My name is Benjamin Nguyen.
Thank you.
I'm the co-owner of Cloud 49 out in Eagle River, Alaska. I have been an avid smoker of traditional cigarettes for a long time. I am now 31 and have been smoke-free for a little over 2 years. I have tried to quit smoking several times due to bleeding gums, and well, that basically gave me a kind of a wake-up call. Knowing that I don't have medical insurance gave me quite a scare. Even a worst-case scenario, my cousin from Texas introduced me to e-cigs, and thanks to him, I'm feeling a lot better now with no more bleeding gums. From my experience, I truly believe traditional cigarettes are not the true addiction, but more of a habit that goes along with cigarettes, something I would like to call muscle memory, the hand-to-mouth motion. From my insight and experience, traditional cigarette gave me a chance to break away from my busy schedule for a moment of relaxation to rejuvenate my mind during a long week at work. Even though that break might be 5-15 minutes, it feels rejuvenating just to kind of break away from your busy schedule. for people that work long 9-to-5 or even those that work longer hours, those breaks is what keep them going. This is why I used to smoke, but I'm pretty sure most smokers would say the same thing with that scenario. People that switch to vaping will take it outside on their own just so they can take that private break. You see, most of my customers switch to electronic vaporizer, majority because it's cheaper and the health benefits. Studies I have included with this letter or with this testimony, most of the Alaskan workforce belongs to the low-income bracket. Let me play some numbers for you. 31% of Alaska smoke traditional cigarettes. Let's say all of them are part of the low-income bracket. Did you know an average married couple spends anywhere between $100 to $300 a week on traditional cigarettes? Switching to electronic vaporizer will save them a little over $200 a week. In a month, it could be saving anywhere from $500 to $800 a month. Now imagine 31% of that have switched to electronic vaporizer. Not only will it strengthen our low-income family, but also cut the cost of medical expenditure associated with traditional cigarettes. I will submit studies after this testimony. An article done by the State Budget Solution on this shows how the vaping industry will save millions of dollars in Medicaid. Even the ex-Surgeon General, Dr. Richard Kimona, has jumped on board to back the electronic vaporizer industry. See, the reason why I mention all of this is because this industry has the potential to do many things for our community that outweighs the cost for scare. Potential so great, it should be given a little bit more time and more effort to learn and understand. If I came along and I told you I found a cure for cancer, wouldn't you take the time to hear what I have to say or have to offer? Well, I'm here now, telling you we have something that could possibly stop it at its source. Please take the time and consideration. And in closing, I understand that this bill is simply a bill that requests people to take smoking outside. But incorporating electronic vaporizer into this bill will cause a domino effect that would demean the effort that we're helping people quit traditional smoke. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. I'm pretty familiar with Commerce and Eagle River. Where are you located there? Because I'd like to. I've never seen these.
Where Mike's Meats is at?
Pardon? Oh, so okay. You're right near the subway there.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. And I'm not trying to give you an advertisement. I'd like to see things that are Commerce, and I'm not a smoker, so I hadn't availed myself of looking. So I wish I would have known where you were.
Oh, thank you. I would love to have you come by and check us out.
Thank you. Mike's Meat has some fine bargains and good quality as well. Next, we're going to... Thank you very much, Mr. Nguyen. We have an off-net, Brandon McCoy. Are you still with us, sir? We'll come back if he's... available. Let's go to the Matt Sue. I'm going to start with Janet Kincaid. I know you were at the last meeting waiting, and I'm afraid if I don't get to you again, I'll have to see you and explain why.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I was one who spearheaded a campaign in downtown Palmer to make Palmer smoke-free. We didn't quite convince the council, but we went by referendum. And most of the bar owners are now very grateful. They found it not only increased business, but it lowered expenses by not having to clean smoke eaters and clean the bar. So I strongly urge that you support this bill. It's good for business, and it's good for health. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you back home there.
Good. Thank you.
Brenda Sheldon from Wasilla. Also with the Matsu LIO.
For the record, my name is Brenda Sheldon. I'm a resident of the Matsu Valley. Chairman Stoltz and Senate State Affairs Committee members, I appreciate your time. I support SB 1 for the following three reasons. With respect to smoke-free workplace regulations already in place, the hype or noise that has been made concerning the financial impact on businesses has been dispelled. I would never support a regulation that created a barrier to a small or local business. Second, the World Health Organization, the CDC, the Surgeon General, all have documented the detriment of secondhand smoke. This cannot be dispelled. Third, employees are our most important asset. Making an investment in their health means adopting solid and proven safety measures. We must eliminate secondhand smoke from workplaces. The result will be a safe and productive worker and reduce costs of healthcare coverage and benefits. Again, for these three reasons, I support SB 1. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sheldon. Robin Menard, also at the same location, then followed by Misty Jensen.
Good morning. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to testify today. I'm Robin Menard from Mat-Su Health Foundation, but I'm actually going to read to you a letter from Benjamin Almeida, who is one of Mat-Su Health Foundation's board members. He couldn't be here today because he's a medical professional and had clients, patients to see. So I'll just real briefly share his letter. As a veteran of the U.S. Army with service in both Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as a health care provider who sees the detriment of secondhand smoke, I am writing to voice my support for SB 1. It has been well proven for decades that secondhand smoke is directly responsible for a number of poor health outcomes. Banning indoor smoking in the workplace is not about individual rights, but about protecting public health. The same bans apply to driving while under the influence of alcohol, seatbelt laws, and at the extreme end, child labor laws. As a veteran, I fought for not only individual rights, but for the rule of law to protect my nation, my community, and my family. So I'm particularly dismayed when I hear that opposition to this bill is being placed on the backs of veterans. Veterans are held to the same high standards as everyone else in our nation. There are no special exceptions. Smoking and all its poor health outcomes disproportionately impact vets, in large part because of the long history of tobacco company exploitation of our military members. SB 1 should be particularly endorsed to help protect veterans as well as their families from unfair exposure while at work and in other community spaces. Smoking is an individual right, but like any action that can potentially cause harm to those around us, should be exercised within limits to protect the health of our communities and the general public. Veterans in particular should be in support of this law as an extension of our service to this great nation. Healthcare providers should also be in support of this law as it will prevent unnecessary harm to a large segment of our population and improve the overall health of our communities. I support SB 1, and we hope that this gets out of committee and to a floor vote. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Menard, and next to Misty Jensen.
Good morning. Thank you for the chance to speak on this important bill. My name is Misty Jensen. I am a constituent from Wasilla, and I'm testifying in favor of SB 1. Everyone has the right to be free from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke, but not everyone has the opportunity to choose where they work. My mom was a single mother without a degree living in a small town with little opportunity or employment options. She was a waitress for over 25 years in a restaurant with a smoking section. Today, she struggles with asthma. The owner of the restaurant died from lung cancer. The bartender developed cancer and is currently in remission. I also frequented the restaurant while my mom was working, and I developed COPD after leaving home for college. I was only 17. You, as lawmakers, must protect all Alaskan citizens from the dangers of secondhand smoke. SB 1 has been referred to as the Take It Outside bill. It's not about the smoker. It is about the smoke. SB 1 protects all Alaskans because everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. And I have on my notes here that Becky Stopa and Ashley Peltier aren't available to testify. If you are, please speak up.
No, they're not.
Okay. And then closing out the Mat-Su, unless there's other folks who have joined, Ms. Ripley.
Good morning, Senator Stoltz, members of the committee. I'm Elizabeth Ripley, and I'm the executive director of the Mat-Su Health Foundation, and testifying in support of SB 1. While we are making great headway, Mat-Su and Alaska still have some of the highest tobacco use rates in the nation, which bumps up our chronic respiratory disease rates, such as bronchitis, asthma, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Tobacco use costs Alaska $579 million annually in direct medical costs and lost productivity due to tobacco-related death. Strengthening Alaska's smoke-free public and workspace statutes will help reduce these costs and will also reduce Medicaid costs. A recent analysis of 11 studies encompassing more than 2.5 million births and nearly 250,000 asthma attacks found that the number of premature births and children's hospital visits for asthma dropped 10% in parts of the United States, Canada, and Europe barely a year after they enacted smoking bans. Why? Because strong smoke-free laws change social norms about smoking and actually lead to more people implementing smoke-free policies in their own homes. And that's one of the reasons why smoke-free policies have such a direct impact on children's health. Medicaid is the payer source for the majority of babies born at MATS Regional Medical Center and across much of Alaska. You can look at the cost of Medicaid asthma admissions and premature births to see what a 10% drop in these admissions would save Alaska the very next year after the ban. You care very deeply about the health and welfare of our children, and SB1 helps to protect them. An earlier analysis of the impact of smoking bans on adult health demonstrated a 15% reduction in cardiovascular events. Every community that has instituted these smoking bans has seen a decrease in heart attacks. On behalf of our citizens, Alaska needs a more robust clean indoor air statute, which includes e-cigarettes. Increasing tobacco-free Alaskans is a goal of the Healthy Alaska 2020, and clean indoor air is the number one strategy of the Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program to this end. Only half of Alaskans are protected by smoke-free workplace laws. Many jurisdictions, such as the Metsubura, do not have the health powers necessary to pass an area-wide smoke-free law. And SB1 is the next step in further reducing smoking rates and secondhand smoke exposure in Alaska. It's the next step in raising the health status of all Alaskans. The Medicine Health Foundation Board of Directors unanimously supports this bill and respectfully asks you to expedite its passage. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ms. Ripley. Is there anybody else at the Wasilla LIL that wishes to testify?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to the Kodiak LIO. We have Ms. Folger and Mr. Gatter. Are you still with us?
Ms. Folger had to leave. Mr. Gatter is still here, and so is Ms. McTavish.
Okay. Oh, they're on separate sheets here. All right. We'll go to Mr. Gatter and then Ms. McTavish.
Hi, good morning. My name is George Gatter, Jr. I'm an owner of a smoking bar and a non-smoking bar. I strongly oppose SB1. I firsthand went non-smoking for 60 days, and I saw a huge revenue decline. My actual neighbor in a similar business, he has gone smoking, non-smoking several times because of the decline in revenues. And we are in the downtown district of Kodiak, the busiest part of Kodiak. First, I'd like to point out that this is private property. Although my doors are open to the public, this is private property, and I believe that I have the right to conduct business as how I see fit. Second, everybody in my establishment is over 21. This bill doesn't protect anyone that doesn't want to be there. If you don't want to work at Tony's Bar, you don't have to. If you don't want to come in my doors, you don't have to. There's nothing making a grown adult walk in the doors of a smoking establishment. In my eyes, laws should be made to protect our youth and adults that cannot protect themselves. And I believe that pushing smokers from a controlled space out into the streets in front of our youthful eyes will create the next generation of smokers, because youth will see adults smoking on every single sidewalk because they have no place to smoke inside a safe, controlled area. And the other thing I'd like to point out that's never been brought up is grandfather rights for this. For smoking establishments. My bar has been smoking for 45 plus years, maybe even longer. I don't even know the whole history of smoking in my facility, but This law will dramatically affect my business, and I strongly oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gatter. And next we have Ms. McTavish.
Yes, good morning, Senator Stoltz and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. My name is Betty McTavish, and I'm a seven-year resident of Kodiak, Alaska, where we are not covered by any smoke-free workplace law currently. I'm happy to say that I have not had my yearly case of pneumonia since I left exposure to secondhand smoke, so this is an important health issue. 50% of Alaska's workers are not covered by smoke-free workplace laws, and you can change this. Locally, there has been a survey conducted by our newspaper that resulted in 71% in favor of passage of SB 1. Our Kodiak Island Borough passed a resolution of support also for SB 1. I urge you to pass SB 1 through committee to get a vote this legislative session, because lives are at stake. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McTavish. Does that conclude Kodiak LIO's testimony?
That concludes Kodiak LIO. Thank you. Thank
you. Hope you'll stay on and listen. Next, we'll go to the Ketchikan LIO, Terrence Robbins, and anyone else who is there.
Hi, there's only me. Good morning, and thank you for your time. I support SB 1 because I've witnessed the last ragged breath that my only grandfather took, and I saw my mother spend two of her retirement years desperately trying to comfort and care for her little sisters as they wasted away and eventually succumbed to their cancer. Smoking is so addictive and so deadly that, in my opinion, this simple act, protecting our friends, our family, and our neighbors from secondhand smoke, will surely prevent illness. It will save lives. It will help tobacco users quit smoking. And by changing community norms regarding smoking, it will reduce youth smoking rates. Thank you very much for your hard work.
Thank you. And that, I guess, that concludes Ketchikan. We'll next go to Kenai. Ms. Ollendorf.
Good morning. My name is Jenny Ollendorf. I live and work in Soldotna. Thank you for the opportunity this morning to speak in favor of SB 1. Before 2005, unless I walked through cigarette smoke going into a store, I wasn't regularly exposed to secondhand smoke. So short of being slightly annoyed by passing through a cloud of smoke, it did not impact me, so I really didn't care or consider what working in a smoking environment might mean to non-smokers that did. Then in 2005, I started working in a strip mall in Soldotna, where our offices shared a wall with a business where smoking was allowed indoors. Every day for 5 years, I had to breathe in cigarette smoke that came through the ventilation system and the walls. The landlord refused to require that the business next door have their employees and patrons simply take it outside, which is all that we ever asked. Finally, in 2010, we were forced to choose between our job and our health. We broke our lease, and we moved into a smoke-free building across town. Please do the right thing for public health and support Senator Michiki's effort to protect all Alaskan workers in their workplace from secondhand smoke and e-cigarette aerosol. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Mr. Superman.
Yeah, Gary Superman, Hunger Hut Bar, Alaska Board Chamber, Alaska State Char Board member, and Kenai Peninsula Char President. I was down in Juneau in February. I carried a petition down there with over 700 signatures. Was basically told by the prime sponsor of this bill that it was inconsequential when compared to a poll that he had done. However, I did leave it with Senator Stedman. I concede that the proximity of tobacco smoke makes some of us uncomfortable. Hence, we have bans in 99% of the locations outlined in SB 1. We, as that segment of society who smoke, are accustomed to those bans and realize that there are compelling reasons for people to enter those locations, whether it be for travel, health care, government service, shopping, eating, etc., etc. There is no compelling reason to go into a bar. It is simply a choice that deserves preservation of rights for the patrons who only wish to relax and enjoy themselves in the last public sanctuary available to them if they smoke. SB 1 is utterly disingenuous that is primarily de facto already without the bars, and this is primarily about the few bars that still allow smoking. What harm is being done to society by allowing them to remain so? There are 30 states that have complete bans. 20 states allow smoking in bans under those bans. Can't Alaska remain in that category? The narrative that says that there's no economic impact to establishments is countered with countless testimony and statistics across the country with closures and loss of business revenue. This is tailor-made to destroy a business such as mine and others throughout the state. Rural areas with blue-collar clientele. You may not like the way we carry on with our lives or some of our behavior, but as we as a group still have the antiquated mindset that we should still be allowed to be captains of our fate and masters of our destiny. In other words, it's all about choice, folks. Please work toward a reasonable exemption clause in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Superman. Staying in Kenai, Ms. Smalley.
Hi, thank you for hearing my testimony. I'm a cancer survivor, and I think Dr. Stewart's testimony really clearly expressed why this legislation is so critical. Oh, and I'm Susan Smalley, sorry. Why this legislation is so critical. I don't have to be employed. I have that luxury. There are women my age, men my age, who are seeking employment, and to have to choose by virtue of a health issue is not a justice issue, because there are places you can work and you can get paid $10 an hour and not support your family. There are places because of smoke that your health does not allow you to work, and so it really isn't truly a choice. So I know the risks of secondhand smoke, and I strongly believe that all Alaskans have the right to breathe clean air in the workplace. It's about health and economics, and I think about asbestos, and we don't say, well, I guess if you're in a bar or if you're in another place, asbestos is okay because that's a private choice. And I think that the effects of asbestos and the effects of secondhand smoke and smoking are very similar. So this legislation, to quote the firefighter earlier, isn't really reinventing the wheel. It's just stealing good ideas that other states, even tobacco-raising states, are using for the health and the economics of their people. So I thank you, and I urge passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smalley. Next, we have Crystal Schoenrock.
Yes, I'm Crystal Schoenrock, and I own the Portland's Bar and Liquor in Nikiski. And I have talked with my patrons and my bartenders. My bartenders smoke, my patrons smoke, although I do have people come in that neither smoke nor drink, but that's their choice. And I feel that if we could get like a flyer or something to put on the wall that this is a smoking establishment, smoking is permitted, you can enter at your own risk. I mean, if you don't want to, you don't have to. But what it is it's taking away some more of our rights. We have to have a place to go too. And most of these people, they've never met me, they've never been in my bar, nor they will come in my bar. So why do we have to be punished? Because it's the way that they are. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. You're not running a health club then. Right?
That's right.
Okay. Is anybody else at the Kenai LIO?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have another testimony.
Please step forward. That wasn't meant to be flip. I was just trying to summarize your statement.
Good morning, neighbors. Daniel Lynch. Last year, in opposition to the similar bill, I offered testimony still valid today, pointing out our country was founded by tobacco farmers. Tobacco is legal for adults. We are living in Alaska, the last frontier, not Mayor Bloomberg's city of soda-sized rules. Many of us do not believe in the dreaded nanny state, but do believe in a free market economy and business owners' freedom to choose how they operate their business in a free will, free market economy. Example, two watering holes, one in Soldotna, there, and in another example in Kenai, across streets from each other, one smoking, one non-smoking, therefore a choice for the owners, employees, and consumers. That's Alaska and used to be America. The straw man argument of workplace safety is a fantasy. Any fast food drive-through window or fancy coffee shop drive-through window, the window employees are exposed to 100 times more deadly carcinogens from the tailpipe of vehicles than from any cigarette smoke, regular, electronic, or herbal. The state of Alaska at this time does not have the funds to enforce this statewide, nor can it lose the revenue to the state, borough, or cities from tobacco taxes if we did become utopian and everyone quit. When a law is passed, there are always unintended consequences, as in Physics 101, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. As an example, the prescription database bill in 2008 is a prime example. Not only did you violate our U.S. constitutional rights to privacy and papers, you closed off a controlled substance, OxyContin and Oxycodone, and created a heroin epidemic from Ketchikan to Barrow and all parts in between. I grew up in the 60s and 70s and remember heroin problems. This time it's larger and more costly to society. The cost of incarceration from burglary, theft, heroin is $44,000 per year per inmate. Throw in health costs of overdose, hepatitis C, and not off driving that smoking does not have. As members of state affairs with limited time and financial resources, I would urge you to put this bill, legal smoking, in the filing cabinet, as education and habits are decreasing the number of smokers yearly. Please use your limited time and resources to do something positive to end the heroin epidemic, because it will not go away on its own. Thank you for your time and consideration. This is not a workplace safety issue. It is a freedom issue and an unfunded mandate.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else at the Kenai LIO?
We have no one else, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
The way it's going, it's probably good to stop there, Senator Machuki. There's a gentleman in the audience I know has come by several times. I want to make sure you don't have to wait here again. You want to step forward? I don't know what your name is on the list, but I've seen you here. We want to defer to the fact you've been following every meeting.
My name is Michael Patterson. I'm a resident of Juneau. I'm also a former tips from Former Smokers Campaign for Center for Disease Control. I'm also fighting for my breath right now. I would like to remind you this morning that we, the people, have elected you, and we put our trust in you to do the right thing. I am fearful when I hear one of you say that you do not know a single person that has suffered or died from secondhand smoke. Maybe you justify the fact that you may have already decided how you will vote on this bill. Do you not hear the cries of the many thousands of people that have died from secondhand smoke? One of them is Nathan Luth, an American native, who never smoked a day in his life. Nathan died even before me, and his doctors told him his lungs looked as if he had smoked 3 packs a day for a very long time. My friend and champion, another tips from Former Smokers Campaign for CDC, Nathan Luth said it so clear and loud when he said, "No one ever decides to become a secondhand smoker." Let me assure you of the pain that his wife and his kids and his family feel has not stopped. We on the TIPS campaign have chosen to give our lives, what's left of our lives, to educate the public of the clear and present danger around the tobacco products being sold to our children. Are you going to turn a blind eye while they produce cotton candy and bubblegum e-cigarettes, targeting our youth to addict them for life? There have been many studies that all come to the same conclusion, that they are indeed harmful. And we know that nicotine they produce is highly addictive. They say ignorance is no excuse for the law if we break it. Tell me, is ignorance an excuse for the law when you make it? It is written, if you see the good, do good, and you do it not, then for you it is evil. I tell you that you are writing your own legacies in our state's history, and hindsight is 20/20. Make sure your legacy says honesty, truth, goodness, kindness, compassion, integrity, justice. With this bill, you have a chance to positively affect every man, woman, and child in this state. Will history remember you for casting the right vote for this bill and doing the right thing? I encourage you to protect the people who have elected you to represent them on this one issue and not let businesses who are in this for money to sway your vote against Senate Bill 1, because the tide is turning against big tobacco. Don't be swept downstream. I support SB 1 with the inclusion of e-cigarettes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Let's see. Offnet, Mr. McCoy, you were on before. Are you out there? Nope, you dropped off. Offnet, I'm just going to take a stab at this. Andrew Macebo.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, very loud and clear as well. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
My name is Andrew Macedo, and I am an Anchorage, and I do not support this bill. Unfortunately, I don't think that we should include e-cigarettes or, at the very least, vaping devices, because vaping is not the same thing as smoke, and it is not necessary to include that in this bill. I do support that the areas should be kept clear of smoke and smoking. Again, that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about including the e-cigs into this bill, and I don't think that's something that's necessary, and we don't need to be spending money on doing something like that. We've already got plenty of bans on smoking and smoking areas, and e-cigs and vaping are not the same thing as actual traditional smoking and combustion, and that's pretty much it. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Next, we'll go to the Fairbanks LIO. We have three people signed up, and if there's more, we'll certainly take them. Mr. Hackenmiller, you're first.
Yeah, my name is Larry Hackenmiller, and the only qualifications I got is I'm a two-tour Vietnam vet, which basically means we have a right to sit here today and talk. So I speak against passage of SB 1. The intent of this bill is to protect the public has got to be the biggest hazard con this state has ever witnessed. And I don't understand why big government wants to protect public rights because the people choose not to or don't have the government power to do it themselves in their respective communities. The con is representing secondhand smoke as a hazard when every chemical associated with secondhand smoke falls under the permissible exposure limits, PELs, established by OSHA, using a chemical list provided by the EPA. This science-backed standard has been in place since the beginning and is the standard used by the EPA in determining risk factors for toxic air. This standard has never been challenged, questioned, or discredited and is accepted as a uniform standard by all parties involved in air quality. An example of this would be the chemical carbon monoxide, which was mentioned earlier. The OSHA PEL is 50 parts per million for an 8-hour period. OSHA standards prohibit worker exposure to more than 50 parts of gas per million parts of air averaged during an 8-hour exposure. If the PEL for this chemical is not exceeded, it is considered safe to inhale. Now, one of these chemicals in secondhand smoke gets close to their PELs for any secondhand smoke concentrations in any room in any building to be considered, implied, or perceived to be hazard to anyone inhaling it. Yes, that means employees are not working under a hazardous workplace condition if secondhand smoke is present. It follows that if secondhand smoke in a building is safe to inhale under real scientific standards applied today, how can it kill 60 Alaskans or 41,000 other people a year? Or other major health issues attributed to secondhand smoke exposure? Seems highly improbable that one report from up to could set aside everything we were told about secondhand smoke. This is why I refer to it as the biggest con in all. When a Health and Social Service Committee member asked the sponsor in the last committee of Senate Bill 1 if smoking exceeds air quality standards in the workplace and why can't OSHA enforce this law, the sponsor replied he has not measured air quality as it's related to smoking. Then he pointed out that at the federal level there is opposition to this bill. It has been difficult to classify tobacco smoke, so the state or federal OSHA would regulate it. He opinioned that tobacco smoke far exceeds many other dangerous materials. Air quality is what we're talking about in a workplace, yet he hadn't even looked it up, so something's wrong there. And I'm a little upset that we have Health and Social Services spreading public information to the public in their cessation program they're required to do that says secondhand smoke has lethal effects, meaning one whiff and you're dead. Now that's a little far-fetched, and even the pro-anti-smokers don't go that far. So if you must address the fear that you, the state, has with malice instilled in the minds of the public, I suggest you come up with a law to post signs in all places where the public goes that would indicate if the facility is a smoking facility. This would allow the public to exercise their right to smoke free air and protect themselves from the perceived risks of inhaling secondhand smoke. Proper signage would be the less restrictive means of advancing the state public health interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hackenmiller. Next we'll go to Flora Roddy, and also in Fairbanks.
Hi, my name is Flora Roddy. I support SB 1, including e-cigarettes, and I will provide written testimony to that effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Roddy. Then to Aaron Shefflett.
Hi, my name is Aaron Shefflett. I'm here to say that, yes, I do support SB 1, including the e-cigarette part of it. I will also provide written testimony because I know we're pretty much running out of time. And I want anybody else who can to be able to testify. Thank you.
Thank you for both of you. And we'll look, that will be part of the posted record. And I think it'll own that. It'll join that multi-pound binder that Senator Vachicki has. So, with that, does that conclude Fairbanks' participation?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. We, we'll finish up. We have a couple more, but we have three students that they're either from Sitka or Wasilla. It's unclear, but we'll hear from them where they are. We have Ariel Hasse, Lucas Arthur, and Kia Beckadahl. Are you students still with us?
Yeah, we're here.
Why don't you identify yourself one at a time as you make your presentations. And you were the last, and we're a little over time, but we want to hear from you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Stoltz and committee members, for listening to my testimony today. My name is Ariel Haas. I am from Wasilla, but I'm here in Sitka for the Alaska Association of Student Governments Conference. I'm currently a senior at Matsu Career and Technical High School, and I'm currently serving my third term as school student government president and my second term as the MSBSD Student Advisory Board president. And I recently served as the president for the statewide student government organization, the Alaska Association of Student Governments. These organizations have inspired me and allowed me to serve my peers and my community, whether local or state. For me, serving is the essence of leadership, community, and human compassion. Furthermore, I find serving high school students particularly important due to their impending place in society. I believe it's often forgotten who our children become and why. Elementary school kids will soon become secondary students, and high school students will even more soon become adults. We will assume your jobs, your offices, your companies, and your duties. More than that, what is mainly left forgotten is how the decisions and environments of high school students are the sculpting forces of their personhoods. In other words, what we experience and learn of ourselves today will often be an integral part of who we are throughout adulthood. When it comes to the question of restricting smoking in Alaska, I call on you, Alaska's lawmakers, to keep servitude and future generations in mind. While teenagers are not permitted to smoke, cigarettes as law stands, the data shows that this does not prevent hundreds of Alaskan students from breathing tar, nicotine, paint thinners, and more into their lungs each year. Restricting areas for smoking will bring these numbers down. People, teenagers especially, are impressionable. As cigarettes are seen more in public and in work environments, they will become more desirable. Moreover, the wider range of smoking areas increases the availability of cigarettes. In both ways, by enabling smoking, we are leading our youth down a path of smoke. While this bill covers many areas and uses, I believe one section in particular stands proof for the rest, particularly for youth. As students prepare monetarily and skills-wise for the world beyond the schoolhouse, many begin work at their first job. This job provides essential professional skills that students can attain in a more forgiving environment than their first post-secondary occupation. However, while these jobs are helping to build their future, secondhand smoke and impressionable smoking is tarnishing it. Without SB 1, students must choose between the cost of not achieving more for their futures and taking away from their lives from secondhand smoke. The effects of secondhand smoke are not up for debate. Each year, thousands of Americans are developing lung cancer despite never taking a puff. Representatives of Alaska, taking away the choice to smoke in a workplace is not near the consequence of taking away a life from an innocent young bystander. Every year, hundreds of Alaskans turn 18. With this event marks new voters. However, I urge you to not start your responsibility to them then, but to become responsible to your future constituents today. For they will be our voters, our employees, eventually your fellow politicians, our mothers, our grandfathers. They will make up our communities. As I testify here today, representing all the students of Alaska, I call to you to secure our safety and our community. Please protect our youth and pass SB 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Ariel. Next, Mr. Arthur Lucas, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And we're really running out of time, so I appreciated all the... I think Ms. Hossie described your role in government, so just your position on the bill.
All right, thank you. Thank you for allowing us to testify today. I am Lucas Arthur. I'm also currently in Sitka for the government conference. I'm a sophomore at Matsu Career and Technical High School in Wasilla, where I'm a member of student government and participate in a number of extracurricular activities. In my community, I know of a growing number of youth affected by tobacco use, both directly through personal use as well as indirectly through family and community members. This can be devastating for youth as they witness the common financial hardships that accompany smoking, as well as are nudged towards smoking themselves through the examples of others. A section of the bill that I think betters public safety and the long-term health of youth is the application to the bill of e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes do not remove the risk nor addictive properties of nicotine. When people begin the use of e-cigarettes, they soon become addicted to nicotine. That addiction will become a regular need for tobacco use. When e-cigarettes are not available, the victim will still feel as though they need that nicotine, and then it's likely to come from more easily accessible sources, standard cigarettes. E-cigarettes can easily become a precursor to the standard cigarette, leading back into the vicious cycle of nicotine addiction. To speak frankly, upon reading the bill, I was appalled that some of these things are not already illegal under state law, and I believe that these regulations should be applied to e-cigarettes, which pose similar risks and can serve as another entrance into the world of nicotine addiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. Next, we'll close out the testimony, is Kia Beckedahl.
Thank you, Chairman Stoltz and other committee members for hearing me today. I am Kia Beckedahl, and I am a junior at Matsu Career and Technical High School in Wasilla, and I am also here for the AllSolid Conference. Whenever I walk through a public place, like a grocery store, I see adults outside the store smoking. I don't believe that I should have to hold my breath as I walk past them as I buy food. Teenagers see these adults, and many of them probably don't have the same mindset as I do when I walk past smokers. They might see someone smoking who they may look up to. The people we look up to can greatly affect what we choose to do with our lives. Do we want to encourage teens to get lung cancer? Individuals shouldn't have to get involuntary secondhand smoke just because they want to go to a public place. They should be free to breathe smoke-free air. For the health of smokers, employers shouldn't be allowing their employees to smoke during breaks because not only is it affecting others around the smoker, it is affecting the smoker themselves. By allowing employees to smoke at work, employers are ultimately encouraging their employees to have unhealthy lives with the possibility of heart failure. These smokers may want to quit smoking and allow these smoke breaks to continue smoking. Doesn't help the smoker's journey in quitting. It is important that teens see the bad effects of smoking and seeing their mentors or role models destroying the health health of themselves and the others around them. I support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we're going to have to stop today. Obviously, we don't have time to do any other discussion on the bill today. That'll be before us. I can read the calendar. I know this is a bill in this body still, so has other referrals, so we'll endeavor to do our necessary action. If there's any amendments or any other suggestions, we'll take those up in the very near future. We'll make sure that nothing's a surprise to you, Senator Majiki. But we will stand in adjournment.